The time has come, ladies and gentlemen.
InvestFest, that's right.
That's right. InvestFest 2023 is here.
August 25th, 26th, and 27th in Atlanta, Georgia. We are taking it to a new level. Bigger than ever. This year, we're going to do 20,000 people in Atlanta, Georgia.
I want you to do yourself a favor. Head over to investfest.com right now.
We will have activations from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 3 days, musical performances, billionaires. Everything is going to be a completely life-changing experience. Vendor Marketplace, Food Truck Village, you know how we do.
Don't wait, don't hesitate. Head over now.
Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining. And in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances. It's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for, intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's monarchmoney.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
All right, guys, EYL, we are back from the NFLPA house at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We are having a legendary run of conversations, and this will live up to it, I'm sure.
This has been fun.
Calais Campbell, the U, legendary U.
What year? What year?
This is my 15th season.
No, what year had the U?
Oh, I was there from 04. I was in 08 draft, so.
04? Okay. Because I was going to say, the greatest college team of all time.
Oh, yeah, I ain't that old.
2001. 2001.
Yeah, the boys is different. And I appreciate some teams that came after that. There were some teams that were really talented after that.
Yeah.
But them boys was different. Hall of Famers.
Yeah. Okay.
15 years in the NFL. That's almost impossible to accomplish.
Fact.
That's the average playing career is 3 years.
Yep.
So 15 years is like, you're like LeBron. At this point,
like certified legend.
Yeah,
certified legend.
I say, it's not easy, but a few of the greats have done it. You know, I track, Bruce Smith, 19 years, Julius Peppers, 17 years. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know how many. You know, if this might be it, but I might play one more. You know, who knows? We'll see. But you love the game. Just playing football, is it? You know.
And you're heavily involved in the NFLPA executive committee. You was on 2020. Named, and then you are a philanthropist as well. You talk about your foundation, and I know you were the Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Yes, sir.
That's an impressive accomplishment. Award. Yes, yeah. Yes. So, a lot to talk about, but first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yes. So, all right, let's talk about, I want to talk about the business and all that, but let's talk about football. To have the longevity of playing 15 years, it's not done by accident, right? So referencing LeBron, it's well documented. He spends $1 million a year on his body, and everybody that plays with him has always said that even I know people that knew him in AAU when they was like he was eating fruits and all that when he was in high school. Like, take care of your body. You have to live a certain lifestyle. You have to have discipline to last this long. So can you talk about that? Like, what has been the keys to your longevity?
Yeah, so, I'm not spending $1 million like LeBron. I spend a pretty penny, though. I budgeted $300,000 for my body. You know, and that's just trying to fly in the best, you know, and people that I just know who are, have experience in my body to come in and make sure that I can get my full value. And a lot of times I tell these young bucks to invest in your, you know, in your future. So, you know, I mean, that's as well as business, but in football future, like, you know, I mean, you know, salary cap is going up every year, has, you know, consistently perception of COVID, and they got to give that money to somebody. They got to pay what, you know, pretty much 89% of the salary cap has to go out in cash every year. And so for me, it's like, man, if they got all this money out there, they have to give it to somebody. And you mean to tell me that if I can make extra 5-6 plays a year, it's going to affect my value tremendously, then for me, like, I'm going to turn over every stone. I'm going to make sure that I, I'm getting, you know, the proper nutrition. I'm getting the proper body work. I'm getting the proper sleep. I'm using the proper machines to help me recover, you know, from, you know, the hyperbaric chamber, Normatec boots, and, you know, I mean, all the different things that exist out there. I got a, you know, ART machine for make sure, like, you help get back from injuries faster. And I got people who are very qualified and talented to come through and really work my body, because if I can make the extra few plays, you know, for me now, it's just I can add another year of football, yeah, which is another year of earning potential that I can't get in the regular world easily.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, like, if I can add another year, I think my contract next year is going to be $6.5 million. Of course, $300,000 is worth it. If I invest $300,000 to be able to play one more year and get $6.5 million, you know, I mean, that's easy, you know. And for these young guys, I'm like, yo, okay, your goal is to get the second contract, but the biggest thing is just, you know, just adding plays, adding production, and that grows your value. So, you know, I mean, my routine, you know, it's brutal. It's more about, for me, it's more about the time away from my family that it takes for me to go out and do it again. That's why I hesitate maybe if I was to play again or not, but I'm leaning towards playing again. But it's just the time that goes into it, because a lot of times, like, it's the money, but it's also, like, I got to spend 2 hours, you know, with my massage therapist, 2 hours with or an hour and a half with my needle guy, cupping and everything else. So just, it's a battle.
That's, you know, I never thought about that. And people probably don't think about it, right? The average fan, like you mentioned making a few more plays. And so the importance of, you know,
pressuring the quarterback, to having three or four more sacks, having a couple of forced fumbles. When you're negotiating your contract, right?
Huge.
That can separate like you from making $6.5 million a year to being like, yo, you might be cut, right? Can you talk about having those type of statistics, and are there specific numbers that, I guess at your position on a D-line, is there a number that you should be getting to, right? Because people will look at Aaron Donald and be like, oh, he's the greatest, but yeah, he's disruptive. But some of his things don't go on the stat line.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, and I think that's a big part of it is you want to be just consistent across the board. You know, mm-hmm. consistency, you know, it shows that coaches can count on you. Mm-hmm. But if you go from like just like a standpoint of like value, you know, like, I mean, it's like the housing market, you know, whatever the person made that similar production the year before is kind of your floor for what you're going to get, you know, when it's your time to be a free agent. And so, like, you know, if I'm a D lineman, you know, I go back to my actual experience, you know, so. You know, I'm, you know, 2011 is going to my contract year. And, like, you know, there wasn't, like, back then, there wasn't a lot of interior rushers getting 10 sacks. You know, if you can get six,
that's a lot.
Seven, eight sacks, you know, I mean, that was the high number for the interior guys. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt, they came through. And J.J.'s more outside, but he plays a little interior, too. Yeah. But they came through and changed the game. You know, Chris Jones, I mean, this stuff is way different now. But yeah. The game has changed, too. Back then, it was a little more of a running game, too, still. But, you know, I mean, so the number was, you know, if you can get to eight sacks, you know, I mean, you were a premier pass rusher inside. And so, I, you know, my mindset was like, cool, like, you know, my production level, my contract here, I got eight sacks, I had the block kicks, I had, you know, added, you know, different ways of value. And, you know, you look at what the market was going for, you know, it was just like, you know, I mean, if I would have been, you know, had my same, you know, statistics, but I'd have only got like three or four sacks, you know, would have had a few less batted balls or some kind of way of chasing game, you know, I'm going to the market and they're going to be like, okay, your production based off what other guys are getting, that's like, you know, $2-3 million a year versus, you know, $11 million a year I end up getting, you know, mm-hmm. which is like crazy because the difference between those four or five plays is the difference between, you know, $8-9 million a year, which, you know, over time is huge.
Adds up.
So you said $300,000 for your body. Can you just break that down? Like, what does that include? A nutritionist, a personal trainer, a massage person? Yeah. Like, what's so, that?
Between chef, you know, I do an ankle specialist that comes up and just works on my ankles and knees and hips. But really, ankles is where I really feel the difference. I have a massage lady that comes in, like, actually is there. I get five massages a week from her weekly. And I give her a salary for being up there for the whole year with me. And then I fly everybody else in. I got a guy who comes in. He's a body specialist, but I use needles. And then if I have something bother me, you know, he does deep tissue as well. So from a chef, from my massage therapist, and then flying in specialists whenever I need them for different things, which I have people coming regularly on. And then
personal trainer?
I don't even factor in the personal training off season in that number, you know, so that's separate. But the personal training off season, you know, and then, you know, the, like the, you know, cause I'll spend part of the year training in Phoenix, part of year training in Thousand Oaks in California. And then I'm on my own when I'm in Miami and stuff. So, like, you know, the way it goes, like, that's a whole different bucket of resources. But yeah, overall, you know, now I got to run the numbers. I think last year, what I ended up spending was like 205. This year it's gonna be a little more than that, but it's still like, you know, just budgeted, you know, just where I'm gonna be at. But I mean, you know, honestly, to spend that much money is only because you're getting the best of the best and you got to compensate them from being out there and taking time from the other people they can make money from. If you're just doing local people, like if I'm a young guy, you know, you don't have to spend $200,000. You just gotta get, you gotta find the people that work for you. You know, I just know who works for me, but that's where it comes up to a higher number.
At what point did you get to that number and saying, I need to focus on getting my body right, making sure? Was it like maybe after an injury, or were you hit a number in your career and said, all right, let me take this a little bit more serious?
Yeah, nah, so it gradually built, you know. I mean, honestly, I did minimal body work till about year seven, you know. I tell guys this all the time. Like, I wish I did it earlier, but I did till year, I didn't do nothing until about year seven. But I didn't really need too much because I was a freak athlete, and so I had you know an ability to go out there, and I was very blessed too. Like, just I never had like really crazy serious injuries. I've been very, very fortunate, and so you know. But at, you know, year seven came around, and I started feeling just a little bit different. I'm like, I wanted to, like, I was playing like really good ball, but I wasn't a pro bowler yet. I didn't get to all pros yet, mm-hmm. and I felt like I was like, you know, just a step below those guys. And so I was like, let me get more serious about this. So not only did I improve on my taking my body, but I also improved in my training and everything else. I mean, I really went to like being a guy that worked harder to be in the NFL to trying to outwork everybody in the NFL. Mm. And that really took the changed my whole career. And I had the best success, you know, from year seven on. You know, I mean, I guess it depends on what metrics you use, but there's a lot of metrics that will show you that that was from like year seven to year like 13, that little, you know, 6 year stretch. And I was a bad man, you know.
This is true.
but each year I had to add. So I never spent, you know, the $200,000 on my body until like last year was the first time getting over that threshold. And then, you know, the year before last, and then this last season, you know, I budgeted for 300, but I don't think I got that high. You know, but before then, you know, it was probably like, you know, 50, then it was like 75, and then it was like 100, and it just kind of gradually built up each year. But each year also needed more body work, because I'm like, yo, to play and be successful and have a, you know, impact on the game, you know, I gotta feel a certain kind of way. And like, you know, as I got them 36 this year, I just played that. I mean, if I play again next year, I'll be 37. Like, your body feels a little different than when I was 27. And I was out there, I could go out there and just, you know, I could go out and party Friday night, wouldn't feel a thing, go out there and dominate on Sunday. Now, like, everything, I have to get my sleep, you know, full 8 hours. Like, I gotta, you know, I'm eating super healthy. I'm drinking, you know, two gallons of water every day, and I'm, you know, put my electrolytes in it. I'm like, it's a way different mentality, but my body needs that now. You know, I can't go out there and perform at a high level, you know, what I used to do when I was a kid.
So, talk about, you know, you're an executive committee on NFLPA, right? What does that mean? And what is your experience with the NFLPA? Because we spoke to D. Smith earlier today. So he's in leadership position, but you're a player. So I would like to get your insight on the NFLPA.
Yeah, you know.
No pressure.
Hey, man, I'm going to keep it real, you know, all the time. You know, and so, you know, I joined the PA because people kept coming to me like, hey, man, you should be in the PA. You know, and like, you know, really just as a rep for the team, I kept getting pushed like, yo, you should be a rep. Because, I mean, guys knew I just cared. I'm always trying to share knowledge and talk to guys, help guys through things. So they was like, man, you should be our rep. Excuse me. So eventually I was like, all right, cool. Because, I mean, I kind of shied away from it because I knew it was extra work. And I was like, you know, I'm trying to hang out, have a good time. Yeah. You know, I mean, you already got so much time dedicated to playing good football. But then, you know, I would always complain about little things here and there like everybody else does. And then one day, you know, I finally showed up and was like, okay, I'm going to go to the rep meetings. I'm going to go check it out. And I'll be the rep, you know, and they voted me in. And when I got there, I was like, man, I should have been coming. I wish I came here the whole time because this is where, you know, where progress is made. And so, you know, I mean, the way the union works is like, it's just the players, you know, we have 32 reps, you know, very high turnover. So it's not like other unions where you get people in the position for a long time and be able to build the experience to be able to like, you know better, you know. And so it's kind of hard because you have so much job turnover and so many new reps coming in. You're always trying to educate people. So it's really tough. So I was like, you know, we need more star players who are going to have like longevity and guys who are going to, you know, be able to be around for a long time. And with that team, not just in the NFL, but with a particular team, so they can actually get some progress made. So I was like, you know, as a player, I knew where, you know, like, you know, where I was at in the NFL. So I was like, yeah, I need to be more involved. So I decided to get more involved, and I was a rep for a few years. And then some people kept telling me like, hey, you should join the EC, because I'm in meetings asking questions, just trying to get a feel for things. And I joined the EC, and like my role in the EC really is just to try to, you know, I mean, you know, we have our creed about, you know, protecting where we've already come from, all the people that came before us, you know, maximizing our value now and then leaving a better tomorrow for the guys that come after us, you know. And, you know, my mindset is like, okay, like I ain't really worried about me. I'm not worried about what we got going on right now. I'm trying to make, you know, the NFL better for the people that come after us and lead the game stronger than when I came into it. And so, you know, I mean, you think about, you know, just the trajectory we've had, and like, you know, guys are going to complain all the time. You know, you get, you know, into the locker rooms, and a lot of times when guys complain, it's really because they're misinformed. You know, they don't really have all the knowledge. Once you break it down to them, give them the knowledge, you know, then they're like, oh, it makes sense. So it really comes down to like just, you know, communication and making sure we educate our youth on like, you know, just the history of the union and, you know, where we come and, you know, where we're trying to go and stuff like that. You know, and guys, you know, we talk about like, you know, trying to improve our medical benefits for longer term, because right now we only get 5 years of medical insurance if we're done playing. And then after that, you have an HRA where you can purchase more, but everybody's, you know, it's going to be different. You know, we talk about improving, so lifetime medical or longer medical history. I mean, I lost my train of thought on where I was going next, but either way it goes, there's a lot of things in the union that, you know, we're trying to get done. And it's like, you know, the biggest thing is like, I was talking about guaranteed contracts, but the biggest thing is like, you know, it really comes down to us coming together, communicating, putting together a plan and then executing it. And that comes with leadership. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to take a leadership role and I'm going to try to make sure that we, you know, just put ourselves in position to be stronger. And so like you think about the NFL, the NFLPA is a business. And like you think about like, you know, we're a union, but we're also a business. And like, I mean, I don't know how many unions, I don't know like a lot about other unions. D. Smith comes on and we talk a lot, you know, he kind of educates me a lot of the unions and stuff, but I mean, we have, you know, from our dues and everything else, we have we're a $1 billion company, you know. Then you get our licensing and everything else, and the way that's growing, and we're partnership, you know, making partnerships with other unions and creating that one team, you know. Then we have, you know, the one thing about NFLPA is that every player that comes to the NFL will be a retired player, and so we really took it upon ourselves to make sure that we also help, you know, the guys who after getting to retirement and stuff. So we have a trust and we have so many other things that we do. But the biggest thing was just like getting informed and then trying to share that information, because we do a lot of things. I mean, NFL, you know, and the thing I'm pushing the most right now is financial literacy, which is awesome to see you guys here. Because like when I first got to the league, the financial literacy program was trash. I mean, I'm talking about, man, like I'm like, man, y'all ain't really helped me with nothing. Y'all giving me basic stuff like how to balance a checkbook. And, you know, I ain't probably using no checkbook, you know, like it's 2008, 2009. But to the union's strength is that, like, okay, I mean, we understood the times are changing. And like, you know, I just went to the leadership summit a couple weeks back, and I saw, you know, we had, you know, actual real lessons, people coming in and teaching about business and about like how different the different growth vehicles that exist for money, and just like all the different, just the different sectors in finance. And it was like, man, like this is something that I should have learned at an earlier age, and I'm glad the young guys are finally getting. And I know it's bigger than one meeting and one conference. We need consistency. That's why I love what you guys are doing,
because you're
putting out there consistently. But I think my biggest my biggest goal with the PA is for us to arm the membership with the tools to be able to create a better future for their families and everything else. So like when I see guys in financial distress, it breaks my heart, because, you know, it just has to be able to make it in this league and be able to make a bunch of money in this league, man, you got to hold on to your paper. And so it really is just a full the PA, we do a lot of stuff and we make sure that, you know, the whole thing is about keeping all of us stronger. And I think that financial literacy about, just making sure that we are all in a great position allows us to be more aggressive in what we're pursuing with our partnership with the NFL. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a partnership. NFLPA, together, you know, we create a great product that is probably the best product on TV. I mean, I think every year we're like the top 50, 45 of the top 50 shows.
85 out of 100.
Yeah, 85 out of 100. It's a great partnership, you know. But the thing that I try to push a lot is making sure that the stronger we are as a membership, you know, we can make sure I don't know if you remember the lockout and the strikes, all different stuff. We talk about a lot of things. It's like, but until we can all come together and have a position where we can sit from power, you know, that's when we're going to be the strongest to get whatever we want.
So your financial education, because it sounds like you take me as a very inquisitive person, wanted to know, when did your financial education begin, or did you come into the league with knowledge, right? This is one of those, when I just heard you say that it was trash, my first thought was like, is this intentional, right? Because if I don't educate you, then I can always use you as my customer, right? Until you become educated, and now you might see less people getting agents or less people going in the direction that somebody's pointing to them, so they don't get taken advantage of. And so did you have to go through things to get your financial education?
It was a process for sure. My dad was was an accountant, he worked for the IRS for a period of time. He did a lot of different things. He was big in computers and stuff. But like one thing he did try to do was start businesses. Mm-hmm. And he taught us a lot about sales. But he didn't really teach us about business as a whole, he passed away while I was 17, and you know, I wish I could have probably picked his brain a little bit more, because I feel like he had a lot of knowledge. Very smart guy.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right, we're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shadi, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy,
real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the Home Buying Blueprint Volume 1 and Volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
When I got to the NFL, I mean, you're on your own. Nobody's telling you anything. And it starts kind of like you pick a financial advisor just because you're supposed to, just because that's what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. And you pick a guy based off of, just your network. So my network was University of Miami. I picked a guy because of John Beeson, and he was a first round pick the year before. And he went through the process I was getting ready to go through. So I asked him, who's your guy? And he told me his guy. And I had all these people coming at me. They all sound the same because I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. And so I hired his guy just because, he hired him, and it's kind of funny because, I remember having a conversation with him and I asked him, what made you hire him in the first place? And he said, I hired him because, I forgot who it was, but the person that he knew before him.
It was Jonathan Vilma. We just thought about you guys.
Yeah. And whoever it was, it might have been, but it's just, I asked him, did you really do any due diligence? What made you hire him? He was like, nah, and I was like, well, I ain't doing no due diligence either. We just hired a guy just for the heck of it. That guy, might be, really good guy. It might have been a really good guy, really good financial advisor. But at the time, I had no idea because I had no knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I worked with him for a couple of years, and then he had a mistake that to me just was you couldn't have. And so I ended up firing him and hiring somebody else that was kind of a teacher to me. So the person I ended up with, he tried to get my business, but I didn't go with him originally. But he stayed around and every time I had questions, what the other guy was doing, the other guy kind of felt he made it sound complicated, and I was like, I'm trying to understand it, so break it down for me. And then so, the other guy that I ended up signing with more recently, and I've been with him the whole time since, he started breaking it down for me, this is what this means, this is what that means, this is why you do this, and just started kind of going to it. And so many different sectors of it that I'm like, man, I want to know it. So, after a while, he started making it sound simple enough to me where I was like, okay, let me put some money with you, and then it was like, let me put all my money with you, so it kind of went away. But it's kind of funny though, because I won't say any names, because the guy I originally went with, he still has a lot of guys out there. And I tried to talk to those guys individually about my story. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the guy is a shark from my experience. Well, I think he's a good dude. I think he might have generally just made a mistake. But back then, they would encourage you to pay your bills for you. And so everything was just going through an account that he was setting up. So I didn't even you don't have to look at it if you don't want to. He's mm-hmm. paying for everything. And then one day I'm going through myself because I hadn't knew enough to audit myself. I was just gonna go through my account and really check and see what was being spent off all my bills. I'm going through my stuff and I see $50,000 just missing. I don't know what it's going for. So I call him up and he was like, oh, I'm gonna take out one of the other players' accounts. I just made a mistake. I'm gonna put it back in right now. And he did. And and to me it was just I don't know if you're incompetent.
Where did it go?
He said it was for one of his other players' grandfathers or something.
Oh, he sent it to another player. He sent it to another situation.
Yeah, it was supposed to be at another player's account going to his grandfather, according to what he said. And to me, it's just you can't make that mistake. If I don't go on and look at this, and I just end up missing it, and I don't know, you're telling me that it was just an honest mistake, but from outside looking in, either you were trying to get over on me, or you just, genuinely you just were incompetent.
It's like the movie Casino. Yes, mm-hmm. Casino?
Yeah.
When Sam Rothstein, he fired the guy at the slot machine. They was robbing the slot machine. And he set him down. He said, it's one of two things that's happening here. Either you're in on it or you're incompetent to realize what's going on. Either way, I can't trust you at this point.
Exactly. Exactly.
It just is what it is.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I got to let you go.
Yeah.
You sure you want to do that, Sam?
Didn't work out.
Didn't work out well.
Hiring somebody is tough though. I'm a football player. I ain't no CEO. I ain't no businessman at the time, at least. I'm a football player. That's all my knowledge is, And I went to school for advertising. I didn't go to school for business or nothing. So the whole process was it was hard, it was an adjustment, But then, after you go through it, I want that bad, you just got to go through it, And so I ended up going with another guy that he was teaching me and stuff. And we've been together ever since. And he's been a great mentor for me. And we've done, a lot of great things together. And now I feel like my knowledge, to be able to speak the language and understand it, is way better than it has been in probably I feel like I can sit in any room and have a conversation with any businessman and be hold my own.
After that, did you stop with the bill payment?
Yeah. No, never more. I pay my own bills. Sometimes my credit could have been a lot better because there's definitely times just because being human,
just forgot
opening my mail and stuff and missing things. I had to deal with missing some bills and having to pay them later and stuff. So I mean, I'll take that though. I'd rather my credit score be 700 instead of 850 because
you forgot to pay
for some bills or whatever it may be. So
all right, let's talk about your foundation. So I know that's something that's very important to you and charity work that you've done and given a lot of money to charity. So when did that start and when did you decide to actually get a physical foundation up and running?
When I first got to the league, I was talking with my brother, one of my brothers and one of my sisters. And we ate deep, but we grew up in my household, And so it's we very family oriented, very close family.
Where'd you grow up at?
Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
And so, my dad, just a great father, there every day, teaching us, helping us to kind of like see things from the bigger picture and like just a great teacher, And so we felt like he had a really good, strong values, core values that we wanted to kind of just put out there in the world. So talking amongst each other, we wanted to start a family foundation, named after my father. And so, it's a process, So there's a lot of logistics, a lot of things going into that. Because, really running a foundation is really running a business. Yeah. It's a nonprofit business, but it's a business nonetheless. Mm-hmm. We ain't had no business sense. So it took us a while to kind of get going. But, we had the heart. We wanted to kind of, we had, goals and who we wanted to help. And we wanted to help kids and really from communities that are similar to where we grew up in. So, we started kind of just doing after school programs and different things. But the biggest thing was just trying to carry on my dad's legacy and what he stood for and instilling those principles into some kids who are less fortunate, didn't have that father that we had.
So talk about that. Like you said, it's a process. You have to have like a board of directors and what was it that you had to do to set up the foundation?
Back in the day, you think about it, we didn't even know how to how to file the paperwork to even start a foundation right away. It took a while just doing research and everything else. Technology's come a long way and you can get a lot more information way faster. But this is back in, it was after my rookie year, so 2009, 2010, we started going through that process. It took us, a year and a half before we really kind of figured out the logistics of it. And then we really started kind of, doing a lot more in 2010, 2011, creating the board of directors. We kind of was ghetto for a little while, we had big hearts. We tried to do a lot of stuff, but
took this thing out.
And that's one of the things, too, we tried to figure out a better way of, like today, when I talk to guys about what they should do, I'm like, first of all, right now, first thing you should do is just try to figure out what organization, what kind of initiatives you want to support, figure out who's doing a really good job, boots on the ground, whether charities exist doing that, and then support them, create programs together with them, because I think it's so much better when you have partnerships, people who, whoever have experience that are doing it at a high level, and then you can bring more exposure to them, create programs, or you can help the kids you want to help through their programs, and so it's so much easier doing it that way, So back then, on our own, we were trying to do it on our own, so I'm trying to create these new programs, you're hiring people, doing a lot of stuff, and it was just like, I learned a lot. Learned a whole lot, but it definitely was a process, and like you're just wasting money that I want to go to kids. It's not going there because I'm trying to figure out different ways of doing things. But at the end of the day, we did do a really good job of helping a lot of people. We were really just active in the community with time and resources. I feel like now, the time part, the actual commitment, me being out there, is so much like it's only here and there. Versus writing checks and putting resources into the best place that I feel like they can be more efficient is what I'm doing now, which is I feel like the better way of doing it. But at the same time though, if you got a big heart and you want to go out there and do the logistics and you want to put everything together, go for it. But I just try to encourage guys there's people already doing that. You ain't got to reinvent the wheel. Just support the people who are already doing it.
Yeah. So you said that, and you corrected yourself. You said that I wasn't a CEO then, which makes me believe, obviously, you see yourself as a CEO now. And a lot of, athletes in the NFL, try to become a brand, right, in themselves. They are the CEO of their lives. And becoming a brand is tough, right? There's over 1,800 players, and everybody is its own individual. So how does one market themselves inside of a landscape? Obviously, this is the biggest, sports business in America. How do you market yourself to become that individual or become a brand?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything starts with success on the football field. The more successful you are, the bigger your brand is going to be always. Every person who plays NFL, you are the CEO of your individual you know, brand, and you're the CEO, because we're individual contractors, you know, each team, you know, we get a loyalty for that team, but, you know, you could, you know, I'm a Raven. You can hate the Browns, you can hate the Steelers, you can hate the Cincinnati Bengals, but then at the same time, like, you know, if I was to get cut, you know, I could be a Brown, a Steeler, or a Bengal. And so it's just crazy when you think about that, because it's like, you know, the loyalty is in the moment, but we're individual contractors. I want to keep playing football, so if the Ravens don't want me no more and I want to keep playing football, then I'm, you know, it depends on who wants me. So it's just kind of like, you know, like it's unique, you know, in a sense. So your brand is separate from the team brand and everything else, you know, individual contractors, but you got to realize, like, okay, you know, like I got to put together a process, you know, a business plan for how I want to grow my value, you know? And so just from a football standpoint and like trying to like, you know, make investments on how I can improve my value from taking care of your body, you know, from eating healthy to like, all the other things that go into it, you know, there's just a process that you have to kind of lay out and it should be structured. You know, you should put together actual, like, you know, actual process and plan. I feel like a lot of guys don't really do that. You know, it took a while for me to do that. You know, I had to learn business. You ain't really got to be a CEO in actual life. You know, you just be a CEO of your brand and your football brand. Mm-hmm. But like when I was younger, like, you know, people used to always say, you have to have another hustle. Football money ain't enough. You know, people going broke all the time, you know, and there was some article that came out that said it was like, I think it was like 75% of people, 78% of people were broke or in financial distress after 2 years of playing football. And I thought that was just like a crazy number, but I started trying to do some stuff. I wanted to create these companies. I hired some consultants. I'm spending money trying to figure out how I can make more money. And after a while, I was sitting there talking with my best friends, and he was like, I mean, you know, You really ain't gotta do none of this. You know, you really could just play football and make enough and be good as long as you save your bread. You ain't gotta spend it. You good. You know, if you spend it and invest it, you know, you good. And I was like, I had an epiphany. It was like, you know, like I'm too busy to be a CEO. I ain't got enough time. Mm-hmm. I could do it for a small window before I start training really hard from, you know, whenever my season ends, if it's January, February, if I'm lucky enough to go to the Super Bowl, to when I start training really hard in April, I got a short, small window where I could be a real CEO. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I can't really be a CEO. I got to be, you know, I got to put football first because that's where I'm going to grow the most. That's where I'm going to have the most value. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of tough because it's like, you know, like, I mean, I view myself more as an investor. You know, I try to invest into real CEOs and I try to, you know, if I can find somebody who's doing really good work, we can create a partnership where I don't have to be there all the time and I can kind of just add value where I can and be able to reap the benefits from it. You know, that's the ideal scenario. You know, so I try to tell guys, you know, you ain't got to be CEO. Now you just see guys start to call the lines, start their, you know, different businesses and stuff. Right. I'm like, you know, if it's content creation and things that you can do while you're playing football, great. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like you need good partners.
Yeah.
You know, you need people who actually can run something that, you know, you trust. And you see like the Big Baller brand and they had a guy running their brand and he was stealing from them, you know?
This is true.
It's like, it's tough because it's like, you know, I mean, we ain't got time to be trying to, you know, checks and balances and everything else. So it's kind of hard. So I'm like, man, you know, I had a teammate who, you know, who played for 4 years and he didn't take care of his brand like he's supposed to and he ended up, was working at AutoZone. And I was like, man, if he would just take care of his brand and like waited until he was done to spend his money, he could have franchised and had like 3, 4, or 5 AutoZones, you know?
Oh.
And I thought that was kind of deep when you think about it from the pictures. Yeah. Like, I try to tell guys all the time, like, man, hold your bread. Best case, if you like me, I'm 36 now. So I was retired today. I'll be 36, starting my next career with a big booster of revenue, of capital to be able to go and do whatever I want to do next. You know, if I want to, I'm lucky enough where I've made enough money where I don't have to, you know, do anything. I can just sit home and collect a check for my assets, my investments, and be the life I want to live. But, you know, but even if you're a guy who plays 5, 6 years, you don't really make a whole bunch of money, you know, then you take that, what you did make, you know, and then you go and do your next career. Then you go have that startup capital. You can have proof of concept capital to do whatever you want to do next if you want to become a businessman. Or you could just create investments and get a simple job and whatever you want to do, you know?
Yeah. So what are some of the investments that interest you? Obviously, as your career is winding down, what's life after football look like in terms of, you know, future business creations and investments?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a big question there, because I got a lot. So I start with the things I want to do when I'm done playing. I want to get more involved in real estate. I already do some real estate, I've been learning a lot, but I want to get into development. You know, I know Emmitt Smith and Bruce Smith are two people I would consider somewhat of a mentor.
Yeah.
I don't talk to them enough yet, but
Warwick Dunn, you cool with him?
Yeah, Warwick Dunn as well, you know, yeah. And so I don't know his story as much, and I have never talked to him about business like I did with Emmitt and Bruce. But I'll definitely add him to the list.
Yeah, you got 178 properties in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he's a Florida legend.
Yeah, yeah. I want to do business in Florida, so I'm definitely going to reach out to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a legend. But real estate is the world I want to be in. I also I want to get into content creation. You know, mm-hmm. I also want to kind of something similar to what you guys are doing, where it's just educating people and just like kind of like keeping sports, business, you know, just kind of lifestyle and everything else attached to it. I'm definitely gonna do some broadcasting just because I feel like I put myself in a position and I think it'd be fun to kind of talk up, stay close to the game that way.
I feel like it's a natural fit, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna play a little poker. You know, I like poker. Poker's fun too. But from a business standpoint, poker has to be a business too. Like, you know, laying out how much I'm willing to spend, how much tournaments entries are, and then how much money I'm bringing in, like keeping that structured because people go crazy, you know, lose a lot of money if they don't structure things.
Yeah.
I tell guys all the time too, this is separate from what I'm doing, but just budget your fun. You know, you made it to the NFL, you want to spend a little money, cool. You know, you earn the right to, but let's just budget it. Let's not just spend money crazy thinking, and you look up and I spent $3-4 million. You know, nah, let's budget how much we'll spend. Your first round pick, you made an $8 million signing bonus. Cool. You know, let's take that. We'll say, hey, okay, I'm going to blow 10% of this. $800,000, we're going to blow. You want to get you a, Lamborghini truck? Get your Lamborghini truck. Spend that $400,000. You want to get your piece of jewelry? Go ahead, get it. But just budget it. You know, I'm spending $800,000. That's it. You know, so a lot of these guys, they just start swiping their car, look up, like, dang, how I spend that much money? Because you ain't organized. You got to be organized. But poker, I want to be organized in poker in that world.
Is the Lambo truck the thing of the NFL? Every player today has said that, yo, you want the Lambo truck? Get the Lambo truck.
I think it's the new toy that a lot of rookies are getting.
It's okay.
I drive a Tesla, but I'm also invested in Tesla stock. So I drive a Tesla because I'm invested in Tesla stock. I got in 2013, so I did pretty well in the Tesla.
And
I sold some of it more recently. I kind of sold before I got all the way to the top, but yeah. I still made a pretty penny.
Up there, I'd say.
But that's why I drive a Tesla. You know, I try to use products that I'm invested in. So the stock market has been, you know, that's one of my favorite things to do. I started investing in 2013, mm-hmm. and it's been really good for me.
I mean, obviously, you're OG in the locker room. Do you see players and maybe your teammates looking at investments, venture capital, as a way to, you know, have ownership but have long-term, you know, capital when they finish playing? Do you see that?
So I don't think a lot of guys are thinking about their long-term capital like they should be. So I think it's a process, you know. As guys get to that second, third contract, that's when they start really kind of being a little more informed and trying to invest a little better. Some guys have good people around them that, you know, help them in that world. So there are definitely some, you know, some people who are well connected with the right people who are connected with the right deals that can, you know, grow. I know J.J. Watt and a couple people that was with the Texans and stuff invested in Blaze Pizza before it became a big deal when LeBron was getting in it.
Mm-hmm.
The deal kind of like passed by me, but I didn't know enough to grab into that one. Kind of mad I missed out on that one.
Yeah.
But I feel like there are a lot of guys who are, who are looking for opportunities to grow their resources, but the biggest thing is education. You know, so I feel like, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm in the locker room all the time, saying the same thing I'm saying to y'all right now, to them individually all the time, you know, and so it's really about, like, you know, and being informed in what you do. But, you know, I think that venture capitalists getting involved into, like, you know, kind of like early stage investments and trying to grow with them. It's a lot more risk there, though, so you want to, you know, do a lot lower. But, you know, I think there's an investment I'm in. It's called Next Play Capital. It's a guy who played in the league. You know, Ryan Neese's dad is Ronnie Lott. And so they're well connected in the venture capitalist world. And he does, like, a fund of funds that I'm a part of is kind of cool, you know, because it allows me to get access to the tech world and tech space. And I go up to Silicon Valley all the time. And I've been in, you know, rooms with some really high-level people in that venture capitalist world. And it's just kind of just educating myself and learning. And it's cool. You know, I'm getting some good returns back. You know, it's solid. You know, some really good portfolio and stuff like that.
Well, best pleasure, my brother. Thank you for joining us, man.
For sure, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the show, man. So I'm glad y'all were able to have me on, man. I appreciate it, man.
This is dope, man. Shout out to the NFLPA again. This is it's been a dope experience, man. Just as a sports fanatic, football fanatic, and obviously one of the most important weeks of the year in the season for the NFL to have us part of it. Very gracious, so thank you.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.